99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Everyone's talking about this flight tomorrow that Bezos taken with Blue Origin. And it's the first time a civilian will go into space.
Right.
Kevin Cook is an author of a book about the Challenger. We'll talk to him about that in a second. But are you excited about this flight?
I am.
You're lying.
Mine's much better.
I think there are dangers involved. I thought Branson's flight was exciting. Millions of people talking about that. Bezos and Blue Origin now. You've really got a new age of space exploration. These are the first steps. This follows by about 30 years. The last time we were talking about a civilian going to space, and that was Krista McAuliffe, a school teacher. She beat out 11,000 other applicants to be the teacher in space. And the reason NASA wanted to have a teacher in space was essentially for publicity. At that time, there had been 24 space shuttle missions. They were seen as routine. The whole idea was that space travel was as safe as flying on a commercial airline, which was absolutely not true. As some people at NASA and some people at the contractors that built the space shuttles already knew. Nobody shared that with the astronauts. January
28th, shared what? The O-ring issue?
Yes, the information about the O-rings, that especially in cold weather, the O-rings did not function properly. Those were the rubber rings that held those gigantic rocket boosters together.
The O-rings were made in Connecticut. The O-rings were made here in Connecticut.
They were manufactured in, they were applied to the giant rocket boosters, right, along with the rocket boosters themselves, which were built in Utah. It's one of those things that things are brought by rail down to Florida where they were assembled. They had to hold the thing together, the giant rocket boosters.
Yeah,
they didn't work very well in cold weather.
These rocket boosters, they're so big, they can't transport them in one unit.
Yeah.
So they have factory welds on them. The factory welds never had any issues. But then when they get it to NASA, they have to start assembling pieces.
Yeah.
And it was so big, they had to assemble this last part of the rocket on. So they weld it, but then they put the O-ring over it. And then they started doing tests and they realized, oh, this O-ring, this could be a problem. There's wear and tear and there's gas passing through. So let's put another O-ring on top of it.
Okay.
It's like, let's roll another piece of duct tape over it.
Right. Double it. Yep.
Yeah.
And then this turns out to be the coldest day in 20 years in Florida. The engineers back in Utah, where the boosters are manufactured, said, it's not safe. Don't do it. And they were overruled by their managers.
40 degrees.
Said, when do you want me
they
to?
Said, they said 40 degrees is as low as this can go.
Uh-huh.
So they started talking, 28 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is an exact quote. We're in no man's land now.
Mm. Yipes.
There was a memo that went out on the 27th. They launched it on the 28th. The night of the 20th or afternoon of the 27th, a memo went out and the subject line was help. And that was to get the attention of all the engineers and the NASA people. This, like, hey, man, it is friggin' cold, and we don't think this is going to work.
Not a good idea.
And so they call a conference call, and all the NASA people get on the conference call, and they're like, well, we want proof.
Oh, please.
So now there was a political part of this, Kevin, right, that there was a pressure to get this thing off on the 28th. Now, it already had been delayed multiple times.
And people are laughing at NASA. The president is going to give his State of the Union message, President Reagan, that very evening. Would have been a nice thing to be able to wave at the shuttle as it goes past and congratulate them. I found no evidence that he directly ordered them to launch that day. But it's one of those things that they knew that it was important to the NASA, to the space shuttle program, to launch that day. And they ignored the worries of the engineers and launched anyway.
You know, it's funny.
That, later, it exploded.
You know how that probably happens? Like that, you know, somebody important calls the chief of NASA and says, boy, it sure would be nice to have that shuttle go up before the president speaks.
You made that happen.
And that's all they have to say. And you know everything that that means.
Yep.
Sure would be nice if the president can acknowledge that in his speech.
It means get it up there.
They actually had in his speech, he actually had lines written to acknowledge the crew and acknowledge the teacher in space and
this
the successful flight. And congratulations to NASA.
This was happening.
Part of his speech.
Yeah.
So now it's that morning. Oh, and by the way, one of the engineers told his wife that night that thing's going to blow up.
Oh, my God.
Like, they knew. These people knew, like, you can't launch this thing in the cold.
Yeah.
They knew it was dangerous, and they hoped that it would go off without a hitch. They had flown before, knowing that there were problems. It wasn't this cold. They had flown before, and it worked, and they took that as evidence, well, it must be okay. The great physicist Richard Feynman compared that to playing Russian roulette. You click the trigger once, and it doesn't happen, you must be okay the next time.
Then let's go to that morning. It was super cold, 28 degrees or so, and there's ice everywhere, all over the shuttle.
Oh,
they literally had to knock ice off with broomsticks.
Amazing.
That was the ice team, the NASA ice team.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, I'm going to get into this thing, blast off into space, but first we got to break the ice off of it.
Right. Not a good idea.
So Rockwell Rockets or whatever, they're in California. They see this ice on the cameras. They're like, oh, no, don't do it.
No, we're out.
We're good.
Yeah.
It's insane the amount of people who said this thing shouldn't happen.
Multiple warnings.
And yet it went up anyway.
That's right. And it 73 seconds later, what happened, of course, was the rocket boosters malfunctioned. That leads to a leak and blazing fire that works like a welding torch that knocks a hole, that burns a hole in the gigantic fuel tank. What America saw that morning was the fuel tank exploding over Cape Canaveral. Millions of people still believe that the seven astronauts, died instantly, but they didn't. The crew compartment itself remained intact. They had 2 minutes and 45 seconds desperately to try to save the mission and each other.
So it took them 2 minutes and 25 seconds to hit the ocean.
Wow.
And there's evidence that there were seven of them. Three of the air packs went on.
Right, at least three, because only four were recovered. Three of the four had been activated.
Wow.
And that's their emergency air that's got about 5 minutes of air in it. There is clear evidence not only that those had been activated, which took two people. It took, you can't activate your own. It's one of the astronauts sitting behind you has to do that. There were also emergency switches thrown in the flight deck after the explosion that we saw on television.
And they did tests on it to see if the impact from the ocean or the explosion could flip those switches, and they could. So you have to lift up like a piece of like a metal cover and then actually flip the switch.
Right.
So you could see that after the explosion.
You know your stuff about this.
Oh, your book is amazing. Like, listen, people, you got to buy this book, The Burning Blue, The Untold Story of Christine McAuliffe and NASA's Challenger Disaster. I was telling Kevin during the break, this is a movie.
It is.
If Apollo 13 can do that kind of a business, this is really a movie. And there's no happy ending to the movie.
No.
This is like American Sniper. It ends. You see the funeral scene at the Cowboy Stadium. And it's just horribly sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It needs to be
seen. They did have one of the most beautiful eulogies when Reagan gave a speech that evening, written by Peggy Noonan, has generally been thought of as the best speech of his administration. And if when you think in cinematic terms, this really does have a remarkable cast of characters. The most diverse crew of a space shuttle to that point. You had the second American woman in space. You had the second black astronaut. You had the first Asian American and Buddhist astronaut, as well as Christa McAuliffe, one of the most charming, appealing, hardworking people that you would ever want to meet.
Here's the other thing. Because the teacher was going up, every classroom rolled a television into.
Yeah,
this was witnessed by children all over the world.
So horrifying.
Oh, it was the second tower being hit on 9/11. Like, we're all watching, and you're shocked.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's not good.
Right.
I think that's an apt comparison. For an earlier generation, everyone remembered where he or she was standing when the Kennedy assassination news came. a later generation, all of us, of course, know where we were when the towers were attacked. For people in between, it is this moment in 1986, millions of school children watching their teachers many times didn't know what to say, broke up. I've heard so many descriptions of it's that AV cart that's brought in with the big old television.
Yeah.
And then this moment that transfixes the nation in an awful moment. Fortunately, a lot of the people that were inspired by Krista McAuliffe went on to be school teachers, and they changed lives in good ways.
How long do you think that crew could have been awake during that way down to the ocean? Because they hit...
We can't know for sure, but I believe they were alive the entire 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Really?
Until they hit the ocean.
Wow.
At 207 miles an hour. Part of that, oddly enough, early on astronauts thought they would have lost consciousness because the crew compartment, which sheared off from the other rest of the shuttle, was spinning. In fact, it was trailing cables that had brought power and air into the crew compartment. And oddly enough, they behaved like the tail of a kite. So as the crew compartment fell, it fell smoothly, was not spinning crazily, and that gives them a chance to be aware of what's going on for that long period.
But they were feeling like 200 Gs. I mean, wouldn't that put them out?
Actually, it wasn't. It went up to about, it went up initially to about 20 Gs. And after that, it's like a roller coaster. It goes up. It's barely moving. It continues to go up after the explosion until it runs out. It was moving it faster than a rifle bullet at the explosion. So it continues to go up, then finally begins to fall. And after that, it's like being in a NASA race car that's going 200 miles an hour. It was not insane amount of G's on the way down. They could very well have been, and I think they were aware.
Jesus, that makes it even worse.
So what killed them? The impact of hitting the water?
Yeah.
Yes.
Damn.
Yeah. A lot of people blasting off into space like Bezos tomorrow. They're making it look easy, but there are a lot of people who didn't make it as we were trying to figure out how to get there safely.
Yeah.
And the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up 73 seconds into its flight, killing 7 astronauts, and one of them, Krista McAuliffe, a school teacher who, through a program, beat out 11,000 people and got on the space shuttle.
Yeah.
Now, as they were getting closer to the launch, they were having a lot of delays, and it happened to be very cold on the day of the launch, and they're like, this shouldn't happen, and it went up, and 73 seconds in, things went wrong. So we were just talking about the crew compartment stayed intact all the way down, went up 65,000 feet and came down to the ocean, hit the ocean at 207 miles an hour. So that's when they think that the crew survived that whole period of time until the moment where they hit the ocean.
Yeah.
Kevin Cook is on, author of The Burning Blue, The Untold Story of Krista McAuliffe and NASA's Challenger Disaster. Is that the running theory of everyone, or that's what you came up with writing this book?
That's a combination. The consensus of experts would agree with me. I had to reconstruct those 2 minutes and 45 seconds. I think that's one thing that, while it wasn't fully a state secret in any way, NASA was pleased enough to let millions of people believe that the crew died instantly. It was already a disastrous time for the country, a national tragedy. The idea that they had survived with no parachute, with no means of escape. You know, the early shuttle flights had ejection seats.
Right.
They were taken out because it was a matter of practical engineering. Didn't seem to be necessary. It was unlikely that something like this would happen. So this is a crew that had no parachutes, no way to escape. But nonetheless, the crew on the flight deck tried to regain control of the ship so that they might be able to fly it down. It was a gliding. It lands as a glider. There was a landing strip at Cape Canaveral just a few miles away. I think the fact that people believe that they died instantly obscures the heroism of the crew.
Yeah. They found the voice recording of the crew cabin. And the last words on the voice recording is Mike Smith, the pilot, saying, uh-oh.
That's right. He was a pilot sitting on the right-hand side of the flight deck. He's got a window that really allows him to see. He's closer to the explosion and the fire. So we don't know 100% for certain that he saw the fire, but he saw something that made him say, uh-oh, and that is the last transmission from Challenger.
Wow. Yeah. Now, if they were, would the flight recorder be able to record the 2.5 minutes that they were heading down, or they lost all power? And so that
they had no power at that point. It's dark inside. They're throwing switches trying to restore some power. Of course, they don't work. So there's nothing after uh-oh. There is a crazy story that was reported in some tabloids that there is a voice transcription, a black box style transcript that was from after that time. I do not believe that that's true.
NASA had to wait, so they immediately started calling ships in for search.
Yeah.
These are the ships that are used usually to find the rocket, you know, the stuff that falls off the shuttle
pieces,
as it goes
to
the... And then they had to wait because stuff was falling to the...
Yeah, you can't endanger those.
Yeah, you can't send them in.
Yeah, they're falling.
So
yeah.
What was interesting, Kevin, was that NASA wouldn't let the county medical examiner see and sign off on the bodies.
Yes, they wanted to. You know, they're a national organization. They wanted to keep things under wraps and make sure that they were in control of the information. That's been true ever since. I think it's conceivable that in future decades we may find out even more about what happened in the search in those 2 minutes and 45 seconds. I think my account is the most complete possible to this day. But one never knows what we might learn in another 10 or 20 years.
So the county said, if we don't see the bodies, we're not giving you any death certificates. So the Johnson Space Center made the death certificates, which has never been done before.
And that helps fuel conspiracy theories that are some plausible and some that are way out there.
Let's go to Mark. Mark in Woodbridge.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey,
morning.
How are you?
Morning.
Good. I just turned this on, and this is quite an interesting topic. And as soon as you mentioned, you know, wheeling the computers into the rooms and kids all seeing this.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. It brought me back to that day. And, you know, we were all kind of freaked out. And I'll never forget what my track coach said after that day. Like, we were all together, and he goes, did you notice? And I don't remember who the announcer was. He said, did you notice I didn't freak out and go, oh, my God, blah, blah, blah. He said, obviously a major malfunction. And that has stuck with me for my whole life.
Wow.
You know, just to kind of just try and keep it together when things go crazy. And I just triggered that thought when you guys brought this up. I just had to share that. Thank you.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Do we have that recording?
So this was the CNN broadcast. The rocket's already taken off. This is about 20 seconds before the incident.
2,257 feet per second. Altitude 4.3 nautical miles. Downrange distance 3 nautical miles.
So the 25th space shuttle mission is now on the way after more delays than NASA cares to count. This morning, it looked as though they were not going to be able to get off.
1 minute, 15 seconds. Velocity 2,900 feet per second. Altitude 9 nautical miles. Downrange distance 7 nautical miles.
Looks like a couple of the solid rocket boosters blew away from the side of the shuttle in an explosion.
It's nuts. Nobody tell all these kids that are watching.
Right.
So, what do you do? What do you say? Yeah. AJ, what would you say?
I would shut the TV off and tell somebody, go home.
I
would. Just go home. Just go home. Talk to your parents.
I buy that.
Yeah. I would not know what to say.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling, Mark. Kevin, you were saying there might be, because I was talking to Kevin during the break, and I said, you know, there's no happy ending to this movie. It's just sad. It's like American Sniper. It's just the funeral and the sadness.
It is what it is, yeah.
And he said, well, actually, there could be an upside to this.
I think there's a sequel in which one at least focuses momentarily on all the teachers who were inspired to become school teachers by Christa McCullough. As your caller, I think that was Mark, said he remembered it so vividly he could exactly quote Steve Nesbitt, the voice of Mission Control, who said, obviously, a major malfunction. This is seared into the memory of millions of Americans, many who were kids at the time. Well, some of those kids went on to become teachers, and they inspired generations of other kids. You know, being a good teacher is difficult, and many of us remember special favorite teachers that we had when we were in school. That's a hard job. I think during the pandemic, millions of parents found out just how hard a job it is to try to help their kids with their lessons at home when they're doing remote learning. It's a difficult job. Teachers are underpaid and overworked. They are heroes, and if they were inspired to become teachers by Christa McCullough, then in that way, there is a happy ending.
Boy, that would be the way to end the movie, right. is to show the pictures of the people who became teachers
as a result,
inspired by her.
Right.
Wow.
There are thousands of them.
Well, a great job on this book. Now, do we know, did anyone go to jail? Did anyone, what happened to the people who were in charge that looked the other way?
Oh, some of the executives got, they had parachutes that were golden, unlike the crew, and they were allowed to be shuffled to the side a little bit and then quietly retire. Nobody went to jail.
Wow.
Of course not.
That's unreal.
Of course not.
Well, nice job on this book, Kevin. Really well done. Hey, Kevin's written like 10, 11 books. One of them became a movie. I feel like this is your next one up. It's really compelling, and people should see it.
Well, it's good talking with you, Chaz and AJ, and always it's refreshing to talk to some woman who has read the book and knows the subject that well.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I was reading it yesterday, and Jennifer came over, my wife, and said, what's wrong? Why are you in a bad mood? And I said, no, I'm reading this, and this is a horrible story about a tragedy that could have been prevented, and many people knew, and they went and looked the other way.
Did it anyway,
Nice job, Kevin. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We're linked up to burningbluebook.com at WPLR.com and 95.9thefox.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.